Hey, everybody. What's going on? Bruce here, your host for this episode of the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast. Welcome to the show. If you're new here, hit that subscribe button. This is the podcast where I talk to entrepreneurs in the pizza space, whether they be entrepreneurs who have built up to five locations, have one single location, or just getting started in their pizza journey. We talk all kinds of folks and share their stories and their tips and strategies right here with you on this very podcast. Today's guest is Andy from Andy's Pizza in the DC area. And Andy started with a frozen pizza company, and then he turned it into, still has a frozen pizza company, but he opened a pizzeria, New York Slice Shop, and he's turned that into five locations now with the goal of getting to 10. We share his story about that. We don't get into the whole frozen pizza part of his story that much because I didn't know about that until I started talking to him on this podcast. Maybe that'll be a follow-up episode. We can talk all about frozen pizza because I know from our mastermind group members, a lot of people are interested in that. But we do touch on how he grew, what his philosophy is on marketing, on building the team, on making things simple and easy, and keeping a small menu and really focusing on what you're good at and trying to be the best at one thing versus trying to please everybody, which has been something that I've been talking about a lot. If you listen to the podcast or you listen to last week's episode of the solo show, where I talked about four things that have really helped me and I've learned over the past 5 years of doing the podcast and running businesses. We talk about that on this episode as well with Andy. So I think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. I think it's a great episode. Andy's a really smart guy. Obviously, he's built two successful businesses. So I enjoyed my conversation with him, and I think you will enjoy it too. All right, if you are interested, you can check out our mastermind group, two monthly calls with me, private website, private Facebook page. Plus, you get access to all of our tutorial videos, and I'm going to be bringing on guests like Andy to come inside of our mastermind group and kind of give live recordings and live chats where you can ask him questions or her questions and pick their brain and really learn from them in person. If you're interested in that, smartpizzamarketing.com/mastermind. Go there. It's going to be a questionnaire for you to answer your name and just fill out a form. I'll hop on a call with you and see if it's a good fit for you, and then we can kind of take it from there. Again, smartpizzamarketing.com/mastermind. Real quick, thank you to some of our sponsors for this episode of the podcast and making this show possible for you. And then we're going to get right into the content with Andy. All right, let's talk about Baccio cheese for a second. This cheese, I love. They sent me some samples. I checked them out, cooked them with my uni oven, reheated them later. The cheese has an amazing flavor. It's got really good melt when you cook it in the oven. When you reheat it, it has a really good flavor profile when you reheat that. And listen, I know what you're saying. Bruce, they're paying you to say that. In all transparency, they are paying me to say that. But the reason they're paying me to say that is because I tried the product and I really enjoy it. The other cool thing about Baccio is they have a rewards program where you can earn cash back for every pound of cheese you use. The cash back is mailed back to you in the form of a Visa card in which you can use however you want. You want to put that money back into your business? Fantastic. You want to give your staff a staff meal from a different restaurant? Great, you can use it for that. You want to take your family out? You can do that as well. The more you buy, the more you earn. And you're going to be selling a lot more pizza because your pizza is going to taste amazing using Baccio cheese. All right, so enough from me. If you are interested in checking out Baccio cheese, you can go to smartpizzamarketing.com/Baccio, or you can go simply to their own website, Baccio cheese, BACIOcheese.com/SPM. And if you really want to check out the product, head over to my Instagram or Baccio Cheese Instagram because they post a lot of photos, and so do I, using the Baccio Cheese product. Don't wait. Head over there today and get signed up and let them know you heard about them on the Smart Pizza Marketing Podcast. Hunger Rush is a fully integrated restaurant management system that lets the restaurant own the relationship with the customer. It creates guest experience to drive repeat business, makes customer data accessible to analyze and put into action, and it creates operational efficiencies to increase profit margins, all in one easy-to-use and highly configurable system. Check out how Hunger Rush can benefit your pizzeria by visiting smartpizzamarketing.com/Hunger Rush. You're going to need a bigger oven, that's for sure. We have quite a few people who use Hunger Rush, whether they listen to the podcast or are in our mastermind groups, and all of them love it. The one thing I can say from my experience is the ability to follow up with your customers once they order from you online is unlike any other point of sale system. And that's the most important thing. The relationship management system that it has that helps you with email marketing, text message marketing, and the ability to do all of that inside your point of sale system is amazing. So again, go check out Hunger Rush, smartpizzamarketing.com/Hunger Rush. All right, welcome back to the podcast. Andy is joining me. Andy, thank you so much. I know you're busy. I know you just said you got out of the bakery a few minutes ago. So appreciate you joining me on the podcast today.
Happy to be here. Bread baking is done at noon. I got a couple hours before night service starts. So we got some time.
Fantastic. And I was kind of checking you guys out on Instagram before we got on here and your pizzas look amazing. We'll share that in a few minutes. But before we get into that, give us a little bit of a background about how you kind of got into the pizza business and how all this started for you.
Yeah, I fell in love with pizza many years ago. I guess I was about 20 when I joined pizzamaking.com and I started making pizza at home. You know, I bought a stone, I bought a steel, I bought the peel, I bought all the equipment. I was making horrible pizzas. None of them tasted good. Inviting friends over. And, you know, it evolved from there.
I still do that. I still make horrible pizzas and invite friends over for horrible pizza.
Of course. Still do that.
How long ago was that?
Yeah, 10 years ago. And, you know, I was at the time I was a DJ. I was DJing around Washington, D.C. And I went to work for some clients of mine who were opening up restaurants. And I learned a lot about the restaurant business. All in the meantime, making pizzas just every day, different yeast percentage, different hydration, different fermentation time, different, just learning as I go. And eventually we were able to open our own pizzeria.
That's amazing. Pizzamaking.com is an underrated place to learn pizza. I mean, I know with Instagram and YouTube and, you know, Facebook groups, there's always places now, but pizzamaking.com is a place where a lot of people go and kind of just chit chat about pizza and like what they're doing. It's a pretty cool place.
I mean, a lot of the greats have been there. And I mean, you know, he's passed now, but Tom Lehman used to post there and answer questions. Yeah. And it was just a tremendous font of hobbyist knowledge. You know, it doesn't teach you how to write a P&L, but it certainly helped pizza making.
You know what, that's an underrated thing too, is like a lot of people, especially now with 2020, I've gotten so many people who have reached out to me or through Instagram, started kind of like some sort of pizza journey, whether that be a pop-up or out of their house because they got laid off or they couldn't go to work because they hadn't, their job was shut down, and they're like, you know what, I've always loved making pizza. So I feel like it's a thing that people want to do because they see great pizzas on Instagram and they love pizza and they want to have a pizza business. But being able to make great pizzas is a very small part of your pizza business.
Yeah, totally. And you know, there's also a lot of misinformation out there on Instagram and everything else.
No way. You know? You mean not every pizza place is successful that is on Instagram?
Not everyone.
That's shocking.
Yeah. And a lot of the how to make pizza articles, not quite how you make pizza.
Right? Making one pizza on your baking steel, which I love at home, is much different than making 500 pizzas on a Friday night with everybody coming in and out of your restaurant.
For sure. And if that first recipe you Googled suggests baking soda in your dough, you're already on the wrong path. It's going to be another year before you get it right.
Yeah, right. I always tell people, because I get a lot of emails, hey, I want to open my pizzeria. I'm like, you know what? Fantastic. Like the more people, and I don't want to deter anybody from opening a pizzeria if you really want to do it. But along with making great pizza, you should like go work in a pizzeria for a few months because you'll definitely get a feel for if you actually like to do it or not. And then if you can make it and working for somebody else and you really like making pizza, then you'll be fine. You'll figure it out.
You know, so I actually worked at a Tex-Mex place that sold more margaritas than they did food. But I think one of the benefits to Andy's was me never working in a pizzeria.
Really?
I remember the first time the reps came in. So our first store in Tyson's Corner, Virginia, I had no idea what I was doing. I had only ever made pizza on a 12-inch baking steel and shuffled it in a little piece of, I was like, I wasn't that great at an 18-inch pie. And I'm telling this landlord, I'm the guy. I can make 18-inch pizza. Watch this. I'm buying dough from Trader Joe's. I'm trying. oh man, my dough didn't work. I'm trying to make it work. And, you know, it doesn't always happen on that first try, but as I was practicing in those ovens and learning, I was coming up with what I wanted my pizza to taste like. Had I worked at a pizzeria previously, at least around here, I probably would have thrown it on a screen and run it through a conveyor oven.
That's a good point.
You know, you can learn bad habits going somewhere else, or we would have used dough trays instead of the dough bags we use. And we would have done no fermentation instead of 3 days fermentation. And, you know, so reps were coming in, the grande rep, the Stanislaus rep were coming in saying, who makes pizza like this? I was like, I do. It's great.
I love it. That's a good point. Sometimes you can pick up bad habits from other people, or, you know, make it feel like you have to do something a certain way, but you don't. You got to figure out your own way in your own path. So 10 years ago is when you opened your first restaurant?
No, 10 years ago is when I made my first pizza.
Okay. When did you open your first Andy's Pizza?
We opened Andy's Pizza in 2018, December 2018. We now have five.
That's fantastic. And so in 5 years.
Construction on number six. Yeah.
That's great. How long did you operate? So you went into it pretty green. You made pizza at home. You never really made pizza in a restaurant. You went from zero to five locations in 5 years. That's a pretty good story.
So prior to that, we had done, I started a company called Eat Pizza. And it was a frozen pizza company.
Okay.
And I started that out of Union Kitchen here in DC, which is a little food incubator startup. And we make 10-inch pizzas. We sell them to Whole Foods. We just signed Giant Food. But we did everything by hand. We made the dough in the mixers. We made dough balls. We cooked them on little ovens and put some, you know, cheese and tomatoes on there and froze them and put them into a bag and put them into a box. And so that was really the start before the pizzerias really hit. And that's now doing about 15,000 pizzas a week. Wow. We manufacture up in Baltimore. And so Andy's Pizza came from that. I was so excited about the connection with the customer when I started making frozen pizzas. And it was me, I had a cooler behind me and a toaster oven. It's strapped to it. I'm walking into grocery stores. Hi, I'd like to cook your team some lunch. Can I cook your team some lunch? And they would pretty much always say, sure, come in and cook us lunch. And that was great. I felt so connected to the product. I made pizza every morning. I did tastings every night. And as it continued to grow and moved into larger manufacturing, and we sort of went to the next steps, we still make everything in-house. We do the dough from scratch, everything. But now I just get purchase orders for a full truckload. I never see a customer. We don't do the tastings like we used to. And I sort of lost touch with that. And I really miss the customer interaction. And that was when I started to look out for a second gen pizzeria to build a slice shop.
Nice. What's the name of the frozen pizza company?
Eat Pizza is what it is on the shelves. EAT Pizza.
And are those sold everywhere? Like, or just in your area?
We're in about 500 stores now. So a lot in Mid-Atlantic area. We're in Whole Foods Southwest. So if you're in Texas or in any of those states down there, you can find us. But we're slowly but surely, we never raise any money. We're not in some huge facility. Yeah. We're still making everything from scratch, so we're doing what we can.
What about Boston? You got any places up here?
Nothing Northeast yet. We just got a distributor taking us up there, but Northeast is a tough pizza market, man. That's not where we want to spend our marketing dollars.
Why is it? Oh, because of New York and stuff, you mean?
There's pizza everywhere up there. Yeah. It's all very good, so it's tough.
Yeah, I mean, the Boston pizza scene is getting better. There's a lot more good pizzerias around here than there was 15 years ago, for sure. But it is a tough market. I know New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, that's a really tough pizza market. They're very, very critical of pizza, too. Like, if you're, I've talked to a lot of people who have pizza shops in, like, Colorado, and they sell New York-style pizza, and they always tell me there's always New Yorkers that come in here and be like, this is a New York-style pizza.
Everybody who comes into a New York style pizzeria. I'm from New York. My cousin lives in New York. My uncle's in New York. I've seen pictures of New York. They'll come up with any reference of New York to sort of validate their pizza knowledge.
Right. It's so true. It's so true about that. You got to not call it New York style pizzeria. You just got to call it like a pizza shop, slice shop.
Yeah, it's a pizza slice shop. Come on in.
So what was the first year in business like for you with the actual brick and mortar location? I know you didn't have a lot of experience, but how'd it go?
Yeah, I mean, we had no money to open it, and we put up a new coat of paint on the sign, And I was cook and cashier all day, every day. But we got lucky. We were in a busy lunch market. And that slice business kept it driving for us. And that was where I learned a lot about average ticket and how many people would come in and just get one slice and one drink. How many people would come in and just get two slices and a cup of water. And doing something as simple as combo meal, two slices and a drink. All of a sudden, that day, it was our bestseller. Turned around, check average went up by $3 because now everybody's getting two slices and a drink. And learned a lot that first year on training, staffing, what it means to make 400 dough balls out of a mixer and start that fermentation process. And that first year is really hard. You got to be really hands-on. If you think you're not going to be there for 16 hours a day, you're out of your mind.
Yeah. And when did the location number two open?
Location number two, it was about a year after that, and we opened two kind of in rapid succession, one here in our Shaw neighborhood and one down by the Nationals ballpark right out front of the center field gate.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, for me, it was about taking my strengths and carrying them through and finding someone who can help out on the part that I didn't want to deal with. So our Nationals Park store, we partnered up with a brewery called Atlas Brew Works, their local brewery here. And essentially we built a pizzeria inside of their brewery. I never have to worry about bartending. I never have to worry about brewing beer. I never have to worry about the front of house service. We run the pizzeria. And so for me, getting pizzas out of the kitchen, I'm very good at that. Having 60 people making sure the guests are happy is a whole nother story. So right. That really allowed us to grow as quickly as we have.
That's great. And so from there, you open four, five, and you have six coming. Is that what you said?
Six is coming. Yeah.
So what kind of crazy person wants to open that many stores?
yeah, there's definitely a sickness there. I was talking to my uncle and I said, you know, I'm building the pizzerias and I'd like a few more. And he goes, who are you, Trump? Sitting on top of your mountain? What do you need that many pizzerias for? And he's right to a certain extent, but you find when you're working in your first restaurant that you have to do absolutely everything.
Yeah.
You are the accountant. You are the front of house manager. You're the back house manager. You're the recipe developer. You're the everything. And as I've been able to get a few more locations and get some more revenue in the door, we're able to hire that team, like a sort of a cohesive team that can execute on a daily basis, alleviating that pressure from me. And I certainly didn't want to open a pizzeria so that I could work 16 hours a day. Right. You know, the goal is to love the business that you're in and to also have some freedom to go along with that business. So, I mean, that's the reason for multi-unit, right?
It's yep.
If you can get big enough that you can have a team to support you, then you have your life back.
Do you have the team? So the team, sometimes too, you have multiple units because you do find great people and they want to grow too, right? If you do find great people, most of them have ambitions and they want to grow and they either grow with you or if you don't grow, they go somewhere else and grow with them. So sometimes you have to grow your company because you want to keep those people with you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I the restaurant I worked before, I told those guys, I said, open a pizzeria. No. We're not gonna do that. Now they look back and we go to lunch together and they're like, we should have opened a pizzeria. Know, you left. Right?
you opened them all. We should have been there right with you. But you're like, you're right. You never know what's gonna happen. So was it always the goal? I mean, obviously it probably wasn't the goal to have six locations, or what was it your goal? Like, what was the goal for you when you started a business? I think there's a lot of people who listen to this podcast and there's two different categories. There's people who want to open a pizzeria and they want to open as many as they can. And then there's people who are like, oh man, I feel like I need to open as many as I can, but I just like my one busy pizzeria. Is that okay? Or do I always feel like I have to grow and open more locations? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I started with a frozen pizza company and I had this delusion. I was, this thing's going to scale. And then it's going to be just like RX Bar. We'll exit and I'll be on top of the world. That's not how that works. That's like winning the lottery. But the approach was, how do I want to spend the rest of my life?
Yeah.
And what does that lifestyle look like? What does my time commitment look like? And I made the decision kind of based on our current volumes for our footprint that I wanted 10 stores. and I wanted it to be intimate pizzerias where I get to see the guest every day, where I can go in and cook. And so, you know, right now I visit each store every one day every week, and I'll go in and I cook at night and just work with the guys in there for an hour, 2 hours, so that I can, you know, keep my hand on the product and stay in touch with the guest. But yeah, for me, it's 10 stores. It's that's the level of corporate support and freedom that I'm looking for.
I don't know if we described or talked about what kind of pizzeria is it. Can you describe like what kind of pizzerias you have?
We are a New York slice shop through and through. There are 6 pies on our front window. There's 2 white, 4 red. 18-inch pizzas. We sell them by the slice. There's no variable sizes. We've got wings, french fries, and 2 salads. That's it.
I love it. I love simple menus. Like, that's my favorite thing in the world. It hurts my feelings when I open someone's menu and I see 125 items on the menu, because I know from experience how logistically hard it is to make all 125 items consistently good.
And to keep them fresh.
Yeah.
How often are you turning that inventory? You bought some squid how long ago and you're trying to sell it on a pasta dish? I'm not sure that's really moving.
I think that moving forward, the model is what you're doing, right? Like, really good pizza, a couple other things that you don't need 100 people, 100 staff members to make consistently. And especially with the way that the employment pool is right now and people having a hard time trying to find employees, I think less you do, better is better than doing more. Okay. That makes sense.
I totally agree. You know, people love our pizza. They come back, and we do get some requests from our regulars for new toppings, new types. And as far as I'm concerned, mixing up my pepperoni pizza is running a Sicilian version for a while. And all of the hardcore pizza guys who come and see us all the time, oh, great new product. Thanks. Oh, we're going to have it for lunch today. They don't mind, you know, they like what they like.
I'm going to show your Instagram right here. So if you're listening to the podcast, you're going to have to go over to YouTube and watch the video to see Instagram of Andy's Pizza, because you do a great job of Instagram and showcasing what you do.
Thanks, man.
And your pizzas look pretty fantastic, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, it's probably pretty good.
Yeah, they do look good, right?
You're scrolling down. Yeah.
You do good. You do a good job on Instagram too. Sometimes I think there people get a little bit confused, and maybe they do Instagram where they get confused because they think you need to do branding on Instagram, which you do. But you also want to showcase. I feel like Instagram should almost be a menu, right? Like, you should be able to go to someone's Instagram if they're a restaurant or pizzeria and be able to see what I'm going to order or what I would like to order on their Instagram. And sometimes you go there and it's all random stuff and videos and there's no food. You're like, well, how do I know what to order if there's no food on your Instagram?
Yeah, I mean, so when we started on Instagram, my cousin is the one who ran it. And I think it's really important to have an owner run it. She's a partner over there in the Tyson's location. And that's the only way you get the feeling of your shop. If you find some intern, you find some, you know, someone who just doesn't really care or even know you that well, it's going to be hard to convey that through. And our shop is not super polished. I mean, we're very clean, we're very consistent, but those were not professionally shot photos. You know,
how did you shoot those? Just on an iPhone?
That's on an iPhone near a window, and those are pizzas coming off the line. What you don't want is to have some super manicured version of your pepperoni pizza, and when it shows up and has pepperoni stacked on, people are like, oh, that's not the one I saw. You know,
you don't want. I'm just going to scroll through your Instagram real quick before I say this, just to make sure you don't do that. You don't. All right, good. You don't want your picture of your pepperoni pizza next to a tomato, an onion, and a pepper. Right? Like, yeah. Why do people do that? Why do photographers
super
think that's
staged.
Great? Yeah. Why do they think that looks like a good photo? That may be good for menu, but it's not good for Instagram.
I want people to know what they're getting for dinner tonight.
Yeah. I like it.
Here's what it looks like. It's in a box. Enjoy.
Yeah. It's, and you said the 2 things you need. Everybody always asks me, Bruce, what do I need to take good photos? You need a, like you said, an iPhone and a window. You have an iPhone and a window and some sunlight, and you're good to go. That's all you really need.
Yep.
And then make sure that, like you said, you put your voice in there. Sometimes when people have an intern, like you said, or hire a company from outside to post, it's yes, the posting is getting done and you may get some interaction, but it's not necessarily what it's like to walk into your shop and kind of the vibe that you'd get. It's a different vibe on social media. Sometimes that vibe can come through, which is totally. I'm glad you're doing. Yeah. How long have you, so do you use any other platform for marketing, or is Instagram just the only one?
So we use Square as our terminal at all the stores. Yeah. And I got to say, Square's database of pulling those emails has been absolutely exceptional. And anybody who's like intimidated by the email marketing, we just went through their platform and set up some little template. It takes me 20 minutes to like put a picture of pepperoni pizza and say $5 off. I mean, if your customers are loyal and they like your product, that is an extraordinarily effective form of marketing. You know, those people have been there before, you know, they're going to click to buy, you know, they live close. We did it for election night. And in DC, where we are, that's a very big night.
Yeah.
And at the time, we hadn't set up order limiting yet. So
what's order limiting?
It just means that you can only place so many orders every 15 minutes.
Okay.
Right. So if 100 people came to our page and try and order all for 7 o'clock, I mean, we got two ovens. This is not going to happen.
Right.
So they allow us to kind of pace that ordering and how it comes in, which is, we can get into it, but that's some of the problems I have with Uber and Grubhub. Some big promos run that we don't even control, and they just start flooding orders. They don't let us limit them.
Right.
Anyway, so we ordered election night, and thinking, oh, people, it's COVID, you know, they're going to want to order and bring it home. We, at our absolute maximum, that oven cranking, maybe $1,800 an hour. That's like the kitchen is moving.
Right.
The first hour, we got $7,000 in sales.
Wow.
And that ticket printer is just spitting out tickets and spitting out tickets. And at that point, I'm like, well, this isn't going to happen. We can't do this. Shut down the website. I'm trying to call Uber, turn them off. They're as busy as can be. They're not picking up their phone. And it was a disaster of a night. So that's marketing gone wrong. Make sure that your team is staffed. Make sure that your ordering limiting is set up. And make sure you guys can be able to handle that volume before you offer everybody $5 off because it's a Tuesday election night.
That's hilarious. And it's so true, though, because you're right. Like, I mean, a lot of the POS systems can do that, but you got to turn it on, right? Like, you can throttle it.
Yeah.
But if you don't, you're going to get stuck in a circumstance where, like, what are you going to call all those people back and be like, you know what? I know you placed an order. Sorry about that. It's going to be like 4 hours.
I mean, that's what we did, right? So, you know, the team came in, we sat down, and everybody who didn't get a pizza, we sent them a personal email. We said, I'm so sorry you didn't get a pizza. Here's a coupon for next time. We want to make it right. We want you to come back. And I'd say 98% of the guests were like so grateful. And these are people who like didn't hear a word one from us for 2 hours before they found out that they weren't getting food. Every other restaurant's bogged down. So now they have to eat whatever's in their cupboard tonight. I mean, there were some very unhappy guests. But I always tell our team, there is some way to buy that person's happiness. If they've waited 2 hours, maybe you buy them a pizza.
Yeah.
Or maybe their family of four needs to come in and have dinner with Andy himself, and then they're happy. I mean, whatever it is, right? There is some level of I'll take care of you that makes that person happy. And us being able to have, you know, 4.5 stars or 5 stars on Yelp at all the restaurants, like that's where that comes from.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I used to tell people, our staff would be like, you know what? There's three things you can do. You can give them a discount for their next order. You can give them the order for free, or you can give them a next order for free. Like it's your liberty, right? If someone calls up and they're really being an a-hole and they're really pissed off, like those are the three things you can do. Give them their food for free. Who cares? Like if it's a $30 order and food costs, it probably costs you $15 all said and done. Like, all right, we lost $15, but at least that customer is going to be happy because they got a free order. And to them, they got $30 worth of food, which only costs us $15, and they're super pumped about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's easy to do, right? You just say, hey, your order's free. You're being a jerk. Here you go. Yeah,
here you go. Sorry.
Yeah. I mean, how many people took you up on the dinner with Andy?
We didn't have to resort to that, thankfully. There'd be a lot of dinners. we have taken some of our frequent flyers out. We had a guy who, I swear, it was in the first like 14 months of us being open. He came to us for lunch every day. He spent $10,000.
Wow.
And he was the first customer to hit that number. Of course, he was the first customer. And he actually brought in his credit card.
That's hilarious.
And we took him out to steak lunch, him and his wife.
Was he pumped?
He's pumped. Yeah, great time. And he's like, it's not as good as a pizza. I'd rather be at the pizzeria. But, you know, that was great.
That's awesome. I mean, listen, to spend $10,000 for if you come in every day for lunch, that's a lot of money. Yeah, that's a lot of
support. Shout out to Mike Lucassi. He's the man.
Is he still coming in?
Oh, yeah. He's there most days.
That's fantastic.
And Mike, you know, he's sort of a VIP customer. So he likes to group text my cousin and I, my cousin Emily and me. And if he's got an order coming in, a group text it in and we'll get it taken care of for him. He don't want to get on the website, you know?
Ah, nice. I love that. So yeah, I mean, I love email marketing too. Back to that. I think that it's a great platform. And I think the thing about email versus social media is people generally keep their email address for a while. Like, they're not changing names or platforms or attention for, maybe it's Instagram today and it's TikTok tomorrow and it was Facebook last week. You know, when someone gives you their email and they order with that email, they're probably going to use that email address for a long time, which means you have the information that you can contact them, like you said, if you haven't heard from them in a while.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for us, it's making sure that they can make that buying decision right off the bat. We don't really send out a ton of information. You know, some marketing companies will tell you, oh, they want information on your staff and they want information on your process and they want information on you. And that's nice for Instagram and telling stories.
Yeah.
You send someone an email, give a couple dollars off. They'll buy it. Just give them a couple dollars off. Like, give them an incentive to actually come in and experience again.
Yeah. People don't want that information, like you said. They don't want to hear about your staff in an email because they're just going to delete it. But if you, I think you could do two things with email. You could do offers off, or you could do like location information. Like, if you have information about what's happening in your area, maybe with other restaurants or other places that are kind of not in your category, but in your area, you could give them information about that. Or the discount thing works really good with email.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you probably don't want to do that with social. You don't want to put discounts on social. You want more branding there.
Yeah, totally. You don't want to seem like a discount shop has to give it all away on Instagram.
Right. Yeah. That looks weird. You don't want to do that. Well, where did you, how long have you been making pizza for in your shop? Like, does your recipe change or do you have a set recipe and like, that's it now?
You know, I tell you what, that is one of the most frustrating things about the average customer is I think that our product is going to change and evolve indefinitely. I am always trying to improve the crust and improve the bake and improve the toppings. And when we make changes, you know, our regulars know, oh, you don't have to change it. It's already great. Well, someone's going to come zooming right by me if I don't keep getting better. And so once a month, I try and sit down with each of those six pizzas and eat through a slice and just see what I would change. If I was the consumer coming in to like grab this slice, I got a pepperoni slice, it was reheated, you know, was the bottom overdone? Do we need to change our reheat technique? How did that secondary cheese melt? What was the flavors like? Did it need salt? Did it not need salt? Did he oversalt it when he salted the sauce? So kind of going through these things has helped me evolve our product and really improved it. Our product is totally different than day one. If you scroll to the bottom of our Instagram and you scroll to the top, you're gonna be like, oh, it's not the same pizza. And it's not.
How do you keep it all organized between the different shops?
Keep all what organized, all the everything. Recipes.
Yeah, all the recipes.
Yeah.
Do you make the dough at one place, or does each shop make their own dough?
Well, thankfully, we have one place to make all the dough. The home store in Tyson's makes all the dough, and the logistics of that was initially brutal. But when we got big enough, I was able to call US Foods and say, "Hey, US Foods, I need you to handle logistics." So when they drop off ingredients at Tyson's, they pick up the dough and then they store it at their warehouse and they run it to the other stores for us.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Super helpful, right? Because I'm not in the trucking business. I'm not in the distribution business. I don't want to spend that money and it doesn't make any sense for me.
Yeah, because I was talking to you. I don't know if you're familiar with Auto Pizza here in the New England area. Anthony, he's spoken at the Pizza Expo. Anthony, he's from Auto Pizza. They have like 13 locations here in New England. And I was recently, he has a dough commissary that he opened up a couple of years ago. It's pretty close to where I live. So I visited it and it's fantastic. He makes all his dough there for all his locations. But he always tells me, Bruce, I wish I never did this, because he makes all the dough there and they have to ship it to each individual location. Like, he ships it. And he's like, it's easy for the shop it's easy for, but for us as a company and as logistically trying to figure it out. He's like, it's a nightmare. It's just not easy to do. And I wish I never did it. So every time somebody emails me and he's like, Bruce, anytime anybody ever emails you about a commissary, just tell them to send it, give them my email and I will talk them out of it. I'm like, no, really?
We've loved it. Yeah. It's helped so much. And it's allowed us to go into spaces that we probably wouldn't have gone before. I mean, you know, our store in Shaw is like 700 square feet.
Yeah.
I don't have room for a mixer and flour storage and dough trays. And we don't have the space. So having that centralized location and using a logistics company to handle our logistics, anything I've learned, don't be in the business you're not. Don't be an accountant. Hire an accountant.
Yeah.
Don't be a lawyer. Don't negotiate your lease. Hire a lawyer. Just that's the best way to do it.
Anthony, call Cisco Foods. Oh, Cisco, is that who he uses?
Whoever he uses. Yeah.
Tell him to help you out with that delivery process. I think that's what's making him frustrated is the delivery thing. But it seems like you kind of negotiated that with your vendor and says, hey, listen, help us out with this. You're already going to those stores. Might not take our dough with you.
And they're already delivering. I mean, you know, they deliver to our commissary.
Right.
So throw it on that truck. Make us the last stop. Make the truck cold and throw it on.
Yeah, that sounds easy to me.
Easy.
Yeah, right. But I'm not doing it. So it sounds easy. But it's obviously like everything else. And Instagram specifically, it always looks easier than it actually is.
For sure.
What's the future hold for you guys? You're going to have 10 locations. When do you think you're going to hit those?
10 stores. You know, 6 is under construction right now. We're looking at a few other leases. It could be up to 5 years, I think, to get those done. It's really important to take your time and find the right spot and the right deal. You know, you don't want to pick something that's not going to have the right amount of visibility or the right layout or anything like that just because, you know, you had some incentive to do so. So over that process, we will we'll get it done in at least 5 years. And then we're making some big changes in the kitchens coming up. We're changing from Baker's Pride to Italforni at all of our stores, which was a big investment. And has come with its own enormous set of headaches, but we are sorting that out. And the pizzas are coming out incredibly consistent and still with that signature stone crust. So we've got some big changes to make at the shops.
What do you look for in a location? So you have 5 locations now and you're opening your 6. Like, what do you look for in a location in order to make it, you know, successful and feasible?
We look for traffic. I mean, you know, our first store is in a mall in a very busy corporate district that just gets hammered for lunch. And we have a great happy hour business over there. Next one is in front of Nationals Ballpark. There's an obvious reason for that.
Right.
The next one is across from 930 Club, which is a big concert venue here in DC in the nightlife district. So we try and find these locations that have high foot traffic. And obviously everybody wants those locations, but it's right time, right place, man. Someone's going to go out of business and you just got to be there to catch it when they do.
I love it. So the question I had before, I forget what I was going to ask you. Oh, 2020. So how did 2020 affect you guys?
2020 started off tough. You know, first store closed, the others were able to stay open, but there was a lot of trouble in DC, as the whole country is aware. We had a lot of shutdowns, National Guard takeover of the city. There were a lot of just very scary things happening here. And when we came back online, our stores that would do 20, 30,000 a week were doing 3, 4, and 5,000.
Wow.
And that was like, oh boy, what are we going to do now?
Yeah.
Luckily, you know, it did, after a few months and things settled in, it did come surging back. I mean, pizza became the food. Because it delivers so well and it carries so well. We had our fair share of trouble with third-party delivery drivers.
Right.
But we came back strong. And I think that, at least for me, it brought a lot of opportunity. In our area, there's certainly like restaurants per capita. There were too many restaurants. And some people went out of business and we were able to find some good lease deals. You know, we were trying to make the best of the situation. Landlords were desperate and there was great second generation space available. So we were able to capture some of that and we got 2 stores out of it.
That's great. I mean, to make the best out of a bad situation is always something you look for. Now, you know, we're lucky in the pizza industry and the pizza business itself. Like you said, not only was it, does pizza, we were all, like most of us, if we didn't deliver, to add delivery, it's pretty simple, right? You get some boxes, you get some delivery bags, you either get a third party or you hire a couple drivers. I mean, I'm making it sound super easy, but other, but you know, it is way easier for a pizzeria to start delivery and implement that system than it is a sit-down restaurant that's used to having people come in and sit down at their restaurant and order drinks in order to make it profitable. Like, we're in a different category. It was super easy for us.
Yeah, I'm glad I wasn't a steakhouse.
Right? Like, you couldn't open for months. And even now, like, you know, even now, where I'm in Boston and not everybody's super comfortable going out to eat all these months later.
For sure.
So, I mean, pizza, we lucked out where we're in the pizza category. And not only is it easy to deliver, but it's comfort food for people. And people are used to getting it delivered. So it wasn't something that they had to think twice about to get a pizza delivered. Just like, I'll just get a pizza delivered. Not like, I'm not going to get a steak and potatoes delivered. It's not something you're used to.
Yeah. So, yeah, for sure.
Was there anything that you changed in your business because of 2020 that you're going to, and you end up keeping?
No, I don't think so. I mean, we're a pretty standard shop. It's pretty simple. Our focus is always going to be on quality. There were a lot of people competing on price in COVID. We had local chains doing 2-for-1 deals and stuff.
Right.
Our focus was extended fermentation on the dough. At least 3 days. The correct cook in the right ovens. The best quality toppings we can get. You know, our Grande cheese doubled, and all cheese doubled. But when expensive grande doubled, it was even harder. But I said, we gotta stick with it. We can't be the guys who cut quality. We can't be the guys who go discount. People come here because we make great pizza. And right. If we stick to that, we're going to be all right.
Are you going to Pizza Expo this year?
I am. And I actually just got the call this morning from my Grande rep that we are officially entered in the competition for the traditional category.
Nice.
So we'll see if we bring home the gold.
What's the traditional category? Just cheese?
Yeah, it's a limit on toppings. Yeah. We're going to go for a margarita pizza. Very happy with our margarita pizza. I got to reach out and see what the rules are. I mean, you know, I think it's a limited number of toppings, but does olive oil and Parmesan count as a topping, or is that,
that's a good question.
Sauce doesn't. I mean, sauce is just, that's the base.
So I'm going to give you a little insider tip here. So I was a judge for the traditional category in,
I guess it's cash for you after this. I guess
cash. I'll never get asked to judge again after this, but whatever. I don't care. It was fun while it lasted. I was a judge for the traditional category. I think it was obviously before 2020, 2019 in Atlantic City. And I don't know if I was a traditional. What are the categories? There's traditional, non-traditional, and then what?
I think there's regional, and then they do some, you know, chopped style. Here's a random ingredient, make the best pizza you can.
So maybe it was traditional then, and you could only have like one or two toppings or three toppings or something like that, right?
Yeah.
Nobody did cheese. Nobody. It was like one cheese pizza. And I'm telling you, all of us judges, I'm spilling the beans on the podcast right here. All of us judges were like, the next person who brings a cheese in here is going to win, because everybody was like overthinking it. And they were like, all right, I can use three toppings. I'm going to use the three toppings because someone's cheese is just going to be plain and basic. And, you know, if they do a plain and basic pizza, I'm going to lose. But all of us judges were like, why isn't anybody doing just a really good plain cheese pizza?
They test the pizzeria. You go in, you try you want to try a new brewery, go try their lager. You want to try pizzeria, go try the cheese pizza.
So that's what we were thinking as judges. This was 2 years ago. Maybe things have changed, but we were like, listen, we were just waiting for someone to bring us a plain, great cheese pizza. And nobody really did. Everybody was kind of like overthinking it a little bit.
All right. And we might consider that. I might go in the pizzeria tonight and do some tests.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, I always, if I'm checking out a new, unless they're like a pizzeria, like there are some pizzerias out there that are, I don't want to say gimmicky, but like their thing is out of the box pizzas, right? And like that's a different thing.
Our thing is cheeseburger pizza.
Right. That's fine. Right. You know, I don't judge you on your cheese if your thing is something different. But for the most part, pizzerias, if I go into a pizzeria, I'm only trying a cheese, maybe a pepperoni pizza to start. And if that's good, then I'll give you a shot at other things.
Yeah. Or otherwise, I'll just keep eating cheese and pepperoni because that's what I normally eat.
That's true. That's usually what you're right. I don't give you a fuck it. I don't give you a shot.
I'm not giving you a shot. No, yeah. No. Thanks for the cheese slice.
Yeah, I'm gonna come back for that same thing. You're right. I like the plain cheese pizza. That's my go-to. I always. There's not a lot of people that are doing a great plain cheese. It's easy looking, but it's actually pretty hard to do.
Come to Andy's.
Definitely. I'm gonna check you out. Speaking of coming to Andy's, where can people go check you out if they want to follow you online or say hello or if they're in the area?
Well, we've got Instagram at Andy's Pizza, on our website at andyspizza.com. And then, you know, we've got stores in the DC area. We've got Shaw and, you know, Nationals Park. We've got Noma. We've got Tyson's Corner. So wherever you are in DC, you can order an Andy's. So come see us.
Excellent. Andy, thank you so much for hanging out with me on the podcast. It was very fun.
Happy to
chat
be here.
You. Good
thank
luck.
Thank you very much.
Good
thank
luck you. At the competition this year.
I'll call you if we win.
Yes, please do. And send me a picture of the pizza that won.
The cheese
yes,
pizza that won?
I want to see a cheese got pizza it. That won.
Got it. Will do.
All right. Thanks, Andy. Don't go anywhere, but thank you so much for hanging out with me on the podcast.
You got it.
Thank you so much to Andy for joining me on the podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hit that subscribe button on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening to this podcast. If you have a question, bruce@smartpizzamarketing.com is my email. You can find me on Instagram at @TheBruceIrving and also at Smart Pizza Marketing. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We're going to be doing all of these videos like this one with Andy. I mentioned during the podcast today, we showed his Instagram handle. You can go see that all on our YouTube channel. We do all of our recordings on video as well. So if you want to go check out what their Instagram is like or what they do for marketing, we're going to share that over on YouTube. Smart Pizza Marketing over there. If you have a question, you can reach out to me as well. Otherwise, I hope you have an amazing day, an amazing week, whether you're listening to this podcast when it comes out or you're in the future. You are in the future and you're going back to listening to older episodes, which most of you do once you find it. Share it out. Tag a friend. The best thing you can do for me to help support the podcast, you listening, is to share it and let somebody else know who's in our industry that they should check out this podcast. Share it on Twitter, on Instagram, on email, whatever it is. Anybody you think would be interested, let them know about the podcast. That would very much help me out. And I would very much appreciate that. Thank you all so much, and we'll see you next time.